Hi, and welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnonphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the world of photography. Hi, everybody. Hope everybody's had a good week. As you can tell, I'm driving to work. It's 25 past 7 in the morning. Feeling good. Right, okay, so first up, what I want to talk about this week, it's going to be a shortish podcast, probably, because I thought I'd just share some hints and tips. These aren't my hints and tips, they're ones I've heard from other people, such as Scott Bourne, Ansel Adams, all these sort of people, Kappa, all this sort of stuff. But I thought I'd share the ones that I tend to have rattling around in the back of my head, and the ones I also tend to say to customers, when people come into the shop and they'll be asking advice about how to use their cameras a little bit better and how to improve their photographs. So often I'll give them these little nuggets just to think about, so they can go away and implement them and just see if it makes any difference. First off though, car boot sale obviously yesterday. Did I pick anything up? Well, no, it was a real quiet day at the car boot sale in Bridgemere. We went to Bridgemere, we went to Titchfield, didn't really see anything. There was the usual array of Polaroid 600 cameras, you know, the cheap plastic ones, but I've got enough of those. But what I did pick up was a scanner, a flatbed scanner, kind of. Well, what I got, it was a HP G4050, which I think is still available, which is a huge flatbed scanner with a and this is the bit that's important. It has a big lid on it that has the transparency adapter on it. So that means the lid has got a piece of glass in it with another light behind it, so that when you're scanning film or slides, the light shines through so you get a proper rendition. If you just try and scan a piece of film or a slide on an ordinary flatbed scanner without this light thing in the lid, they come out very flat and naff looking, and they're not very good at all. So the only thing is, it was missing the adapters that you hold your film in. What attracted it to me is that it has a big glass bit in the lid, which means that it can do medium format, because I've got scanners that will do 35mm film. I've got a Cano scan something or other that does one frame at a time, and I've got this big all-in-one, I think that's in it, that does strips of 35mm and slides. But I really wanted one with that could do sort of 120 film, just like the Epson scanner that I tested a few weeks ago that's had to go back to Epson. So look out for a review of that over the next few weeks. I'll put it together and see how it goes, because it looks like quite a bargain online, actually. If you look up the reviews of the 4050, I think it's the G4050 from HP, lots of them say, yeah, great scanner, a bit slow, but the quality is up there with some of the much more expensive models. Now, I forgot last week, because I thought the deal had ended, but a quick word from our sponsor, GoToMeeting. It's funny, the reason why I forgot, it shows you, us and you guys over in America and Canada, we're two nations separated by a common language, aren't we? Because it was the date thing that threw me. You know, if I'm going to write down a date, say, what is it today? Is it the 16th today? It would be 16/5/11. But you guys over the pond, you would do it 5/16. And so I thought the sponsorship deal, which is only on for a couple of months, finished in May. Well, now in fact it finishes in June. So GoToMeeting, what's it all about? Well, GoToMeeting is a fantastic way to liven up your conference calls. You know, we've all been on them. You've got to do a conference call, you dial in, you listen to the boss. While you're listening to him, you know, if he's lucky or she's lucky, you'll be taking a few notes, but you're probably reading the newspaper, surfing the web on your smartphone, checking your messages on Facebook, or generally doing something else apart from taking notice of what you're meant to be doing. But with GoToMeeting, it livens everything up, because you can see on your computer in front of you, whether that be your laptop or a desktop PC, I think it works on Mac too, you can see what the conference call leader is actually doing on his PC. So when he or she say, right, lads, sales last week were excellent and we were 25% up on widgets, you know, you can see that chart in front of you. When they say, oh, we've got this new product that we need to be pushing, you know, you can see that in front of them. When they say, oh, I've got these photographs of a brand new store or a brand new development we're doing, you can see them right there and then. And as they're talking about them, they're doing the presentation in front of you. All done over voice over internet, telephone calling, and the screen images come through that way as well. Dead easy as well. They just set up the meeting. You dial. We don't need to dial up anymore, are we? You go to gotomeeting.com, put your meeting code in, and there you go. You joined and you're doing it. And it's all available for a very reasonable monthly rate. But you don't have to pay that to start off with. No, go to gotomeeting.com, click on the free, try it free button, and enter the promo code podcast, and you get to use GoToMeeting free for 30 days. So that's go to gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, and enter the promo code podcast, and there you go, you get to try it for free for 30 days. And I'm pretty sure if your organization does conference calls, you'll love GoToMeeting and you'll start using it all the time. Right, okay, so back to top tips. And I also sort of thought these might be useful to new listeners of the podcast I don't know what episode we're up to now, something like 144. And what used to happen is the podcast used to be quite a little bit different. Instead of me just rambling on about what I've been doing during the week and talking about things I've got, I used to pick a subject and kind of talk about it, like composition or exposure and things like that. And I guess I kind of think, because I've covered them, I don't really... It doesn't occur to me to go over them again. But, you know, if there's anything that pops up that you want to explain in technical-wise, I'll do my best to do a bit of research if I don't know about it. And then I'll have a go and try and explain it as well. So here we go, some top tips that I have in the back of my mind all the time. Now, the first one is WIFE. Now, lots of them are acronyms as well. So the WIFE acronym. So what that stands for, well, what the WIFE thing is it's like a pre-check for your camera. So what... We've all done it. You go out and you take a load of photographs, and you might be in a difficult lighting situation where you change the white balance on your camera, or you change the focusing mode, or you change the exposure compensation, something like that. And then you get home, you look at your photos, oh great, you go out again with your camera like a few days or a few weeks later, and you forget to change the settings back. And all your photos are strange looking, especially if you've altered the white balance and haven't turned it back. And you're like, oh no. And one of the worst ones, I mean, white balance you can pull back reasonably, but one of the worst ones is if you alter the quality of your photos. You know, you go down from full quality to low quality, say you're taking some shots for eBay or something like that, and then all of a sudden you've got all these lovely landscapes or portraits that are 800 by 600 wide, which you can't really do anything with. So white balance goes some of the way to helping you avoid that by giving you an easy to remember checklist that you can do every time you set up your camera gear to go out. So what does it mean? Well, WIFE means, W is for white balance, so check your white balance on your camera. Is it set back to auto? That's really important. And then when you're out and about, you can adjust it to light conditions if you so wish. You know, put it onto daylight, shade, tungsten, etc. I is for ISO. So what's the ISO setting on your camera? Have you like set it to 1600 or 3200 because you were shooting in dark conditions before, but now you're going out during the day? And the last thing you want to do is have a load of grainy images that could look a lot better if you turn the camera back to its lowest ISO setting, or the one you normally use. So for example, on my 350D, the lowest ISO setting is 100, but often I'll set it for 200 because it's most of the time a bit grey and dreary in the UK, so I need that extra sensitivity. Just having a bit of coffee. F is for focus. Oh, excuse me, I've got a little bit of a runny nose this morning. I've never used to have it as a kid, but I think I get hay fever now. So in the mornings and the evenings, I get really bugged up. So forgive my sniffling and snorting. F is for focus. Is your lens or your camera set to autofocus? Because you might have been shooting some macro or shooting in low light when it's, you know, a little bit tricky to get autofocus. Maybe your camera was struggling or kept strobing with the flash or shining that orange light into people's faces, which is never a pleasant experience, and you turned it to manual focus. you know, and then you're out and about on a photo walk and you see, I don't know, something like a helicopter going over or a bald eagle flying along, you know, with a sheep in its talons. And you get your camera out, you start firing away, and the camera's not focusing, and you're like, what's going on? I don't believe this, I'm missing the shot. All because you didn't check that little switch was set back to autofocus. And E is for exposure. And for me, this means setting up the camera to the setting that I most commonly use. So on my 350D, that would a digital SLR, that would be going to aperture priority, setting the aperture probably to something like, not all the way open, I'll probably set it to something like 5.6, and making sure that there was no exposure compensation setting, because that's another real common thing to do. You're out and about, and say there's a very dark scene in front of you. You're taking a picture of, I don't know, like a dark wall, and the camera keeps overexposing it a bit and lightening it up too much. So you dial in a little bit. Well, actually, no, a more common one would be take a picture of a sunset. Now, and if you're taking a picture of a sunset, often it's best to dial in a stop or a stop and a half or even two of exposure compensation just to darken it down, because your camera will automatically try and light it up because it'll say, hey, it's too dark, let's lighten this up. So you dial in some exposure compensation, and then a few days later, you go out with your camera and the exposure compensation is still on. You take a load of photographs, you get them, you think, oh, why are these all dark? Or the other way, they're overexposed. So E, check that you're... You've gone to, in my case, aperture priority, it might be program mode or shutter priority for your full manual. Go to that. I would put in my favourite aperture, probably 5.6. I'd check there's no exposure compensation dialed in. And that's about it, really. I also would build into my, well, I also do build into my routine, sort of checking my bag. So I'll go through my camera bag and check my spare batteries are in there, my compact flash cards are in there, my cloths are in there, spare lenses, adapters, that sort of thing. But, you know, as far as setting up the camera goes, just remember white. So W is for white balance, I is for ISO, F is for focus, E is for exposure. How cool is that? Nice and easy to remember, and it really will save your bacon if you do it every time. But we're starting to get closer to the motorway now, so the road noise will start to increase. My apologies for that, but you know, we're on a roll. So what's the next one? This one I think is from Scott Bourne from the Photo Focus podcast and website. Scott's a great photographer, and he's even better at sharing all his ideas with everybody, and I really like him for that. He always has, because he's been a pro for such a long time. He started off, I think, as a sports photographer, he's done wedding photographer, now he concentrates mainly on birds. He's always got these little things that he shares, and I can, and they're also really memorable as well, so they're really practical. So here we go. So the first one from I think is Scott Bourne, is called Luddud, I think, or Luddudud. What it stands for is look up, look down, look all around. So look up, Ludd, look down. Something like Luddud. I just remember Luddud. And what he's saying there is that we can get a little bit obsessed with the viewfinder and the subject that's right in front of us when we're taking photographs. And we can well be missing something really exciting that's happening somewhere else. A great example of that is sunsets. You know, when the sun's coming down and we see these beautiful colours, right, you know, where the sun is going down over the horizon, and we're obsessed with just taking that photo. But you've seen a million sunsets, and I'm not saying that sunset photos aren't any good. I really enjoy taking them myself. But if you start looking around, you'll find that those beautiful colours of the sunset are reflecting against all sorts of other things, and there could be a really interesting photograph right behind you. Maybe it's those colours of that sunset reflecting in the windows of a Ferrari that's just pulled up and parked up in the car park behind you. And it really helps you to explore a location and a situation, and gets you into a routine of, say, a classic example for me is if I'm approaching a subject and I'm shooting it and I do it, as I'm walking away, you know, keep looking over your shoulder to see if there's another vantage point or another angle that you've missed that you suddenly pick up after you've actually taken the main sort of shot. So there we go. So look up, look down, look all around. And I remember it as Luddud, but I don't think that quite works. Now, another one that's directly related to that is another Scott Bourne one, I think, is Ed Fat. Edfat. They're all funny names, aren't they? We've had Wife, we've had Luddard, my wife's not too bad, and then we've got Edfat. Now, Edfat is a way of helping you cover all of the different shots that you might need when you're shooting a situation. So if we think, say, we're shooting a castle, say. Now, we've got there with the family, and we're like, oh, so what pictures are we going to get? Well, if you think about EDFAT, it will really help you do that. So EDFAT means, E stands for entirety, or the entire scene. So shoot lots of wide shots of everything. So if it's a castle, you know, the whole castle in its environments. Get all that sort of stuff in, you know, from maybe a long way back, from a long way, a far viewpoint, so you get the whole thing. D is for details. So once you've got the whole thing, go in and take lots of close-up shots, you know, slowly getting close-up, so medium range shots. Then get right into the details of, like, doors. So again, so say we're thinking about the castle, maybe we do the entirety, then we take pictures of the portcullis and the gate and the moat, and then we get inside and we take pictures of the keep and then the bricks and then the motifs. You know, maybe then we slap on a macro lens or a close-up filter, and we do macro shots of the decals that are on the cannon, you know, this sort of stuff. So we've gone from the entire thing all the way down to the details. F is for focal length. So what that means is try different lenses. So you may well start off with a wide angle lens when you're doing your entire shots. But how about this one? Get even further away and use a long lens to relatively compress the scene. Similarly, when you're inside as well, you know, say you're taking a picture of of the keep, you know, which is like a building inside the castle. Take some with a wide angle, but then maybe you'll slap on it like a 50-1/8 or a telephoto to get a different view to it. This is also really comes into its own when there's people milling around as well, and you're doing, say, like a bit of street photography styling. Now, with a wide angle lens, everything tends to be in focus, and you've got to get close to your subject to fill the frame. But you stick on a telephoto lens and all of a sudden you can do lots of selective focus stuff very easily. So that's good. A is for aperture. So again, what we're talking about here is controlling depth of field. So do you want everything in focus or do you just want small things in focus? Let's go back to that beginning shot. You know, when we were doing the entire shot, then say you've got the castle there and there's a field in front of the castle and there's some nice flowers in the field. Well, one of the things you could do, you could have everything in focus, couldn't you? You could use a small aperture, stick the camera on the tripod, or if it's a sunny day, handhold it, and just get everything in focus. But how about this? You go down to f3.5, f2.8, f1.8, and then you shoot with that little flower that's in front of you in focus, and then the castle nice and blurred in the background. That sort of thing. So we're really thinking about our aperture and directly our depth of field to control that as we're wandering around. And finally, I think T is for time. So which can mean two things. It's the time of day that you shoot, and if you're lucky where you're flexible with the time you can visit places, great. So, you know, in the mornings, in the afternoons, late afternoons can be really nice because you get the sun's lower and you get lots of nice shadows that create textures all around. But it can also stand for the shutter speed you're using. Yeah, I'm really guilty of not playing around with shutter speed very often at all. But let's say we're in that castle courtyard again. Normally we'd be shooting at quite a high shutter speed too, especially for hand-holding, to get rid of camera blur and to stop people blowing. But let's think about that classic shot, you know, where you hold your camera very still on, you know, on a tripod, or if you're in something like a castle, you probably won't be allowed to use a tripod. But if you could put it on a wall or on a table, use a long shutter speed, you know, say, I don't know, a second if you can, or half a second. And there's all these people milling around. What will happen is they will then blur. So you get these, you know, ghosts walking around the castle. Really nice. Nice effect. And I'm definitely going to have a go at that again. So there we go. Keep it in mind. EDFAT. Do the entire scene, the details. Think about your focal length. Think about your aperture. And think about the time. Whether that be the time of day you actually visit your location, or your shutter speed that you're using to shoot your location. So what have we had so far? So we've had Wife, we've had Ludhub, we've had Edmat. Well, the next ones aren't really, I don't have acronyms or synonyms or if they are for them, but they're just general advice. So the first one would be, fill the frame. You know, I think it was Robert Capa said, you know, if your photos aren't good enough, you're not close enough. I mean, he was a war photographer, so we're not going to go that far. But a typical difference between a snapshot and a, I don't like to use the word better, but, okay, I use the word better. Better than your photo is how big the subject is in the frame. You know, in the photo, does it fill the frame? And just by getting a stepping photo closer or zooming closer, you'll often find your photos become a little bit more interesting. Because us, as photographers who are trying to make our images better, understand that in order to do that, we've got to move around. We've got to move around with our feet, we've got to move around with our zooms in order to improve the composition of a photo. Whereas if you're just taking snapshots, you're just taking the camera out, pointing in the general direction, and pressing the button. So fill the frame. And I guess, is it, probably, I think this will probably be my last tip, because I'm on the motorway and it's a little bit busy, and I need all my concentration. My last one will really relate to when you're taking photographs of people, portraits, people you know, so they know you're taking a photograph of them, and they're in front of you. And I guess the tip is don't say cheese. And what I mean by that is, don't take the picture when you say cheese. You know, you go 1, 2, 3, and people smile, and you get a cheesy smile, and you press the button, and you say cheese, and they say, you know, they're smiling, press the button. Have a conversation with the people that you're taking pictures of with, and then be shooting while you're doing that. So that what happens then is people don't tend to look at the camera. If there's a group of people, maybe they'll be talking to each other. Hopefully they'll be laughing because you're cracking jokes, and you get a lot more natural looking photographs, and just keep shooting and shooting. And you'll find, you know, you might end up with a row of 20 photographs, but one of them or two of them will be a lot better than the usual cheese click sort of photographs. And I guess there we go. Actually, my very last tip will be, the way to become a better photographer, and I've said it loads of times, is there's two ways to do it. Well, two things that will help you. One is to look at lots of great photographs. So that means go to the library or go to your bookstore and just thumb through the photography books, buy them or borrow them, and just look at the work. Because one of the problems is, you say, what is a great photograph? Well, anything that's probably been published, like in a book or in a high-end magazine like National Geographic, is normally pretty good. And so, I mean, I'm not saying there's not rubbish photos in publications like that, but they've been through an editorial process, and they're probably okay. So look through keep looking at as many photographs as you can, and that will start building up your subconscious catalogue, if you like, of what great photos look like. And it will intermingle with your own ideas of how to do things, and your own inspirations to create some of your own style. And the next bit, sort of creating your own style, is after, you know, while you're looking at loads and loads and loads of photographs all the time, it's to take loads and loads and loads of photographs. Because the only way I think you get better is by doing. That's for me anyway. And I know that if I haven't taken any photographs for a while, I definitely become rusty really, really quick. But as I'm out and about and taking lots of photographs, I can notice the improvements in my images. And by taking lots and lots of photographs as well, you get lots and lots of better photographs. Something called photographer's luck. There's a reason why when you see a professional photographer on set, he's just shooting and shooting and shooting. You might just need one photograph or one cover or one magazine, but he'll take 400, 500, 1,000 photographs, and then he'll sit there with his assistants looking through and picking out that one photograph. So his hit rate might be 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 100. So if you just stand there and expect to stand in front of a landscape or a portrait and take 2 or 3 and walk away with a great photograph, you might be lucky. But most of the time, you'll be even more lucky if you take lots and lots and lots of photographs and then pick the best one. Some people, especially people who shoot film like myself, will often say things like, you know, oh, digital, you know, all they do is they spray and pray in the hope that they'll get, you know, a great photograph. But when you're learning, well, and I think all the time, one of the big advantages of digital is the fact you can take lots of photographs. You know, you can capture that moment where something special happens, and you're not worrying about the price per frame cost that way. I know when you're shooting film, it's a little bit more difficult, you know, to keep blasting away because there is a cost behind film. But you know, if you're in a special situation, just keep shooting. So there we go. So that's my final tip. Look at lots and lots of photographs and take lots and lots of photographs. I hope this episode has been helpful with these tips. If everybody's heard them already, I hope I haven't been too boring. Remember, if you've got any questions or tips of yourself that you'd like me to share on the podcast or on the website, just email me, scalespeeder@gmail.com, or you go to robnunphoto.com, that's robnunphoto.com, and just there's contact me links, and there's lots of comments boxes you can fill in that I get to see that way. And just really enjoy practicing and having fun with your photography, because that's what it's all about. Right, okay, so thanks everybody for putting their photos in the Flickr group. There's fantastic work going on over there. Thanks to everybody for commenting on the blog, on the website, that's brilliant. And, remember, one of the ways that you can really help the podcast, actually, is if you subscribe via iTunes or whatever method you use, if you go to it, there's often be a commenting section where you can add a comment and a little review on the podcast. Give us a good review, because that helps us get more listeners. More listeners means I can get deals. Well, I haven't seen any cash yet, but I can get sponsors, which means that I can get more kit to look at and review and play around with that sort of stuff. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com. And hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.